Welcome to the Monster Hunter Podcast Show. It's episode 3 for the 6th of August 2010. Hi, and welcome to the Monster Hunter Podcast. I'm Christian from Game Design Reviews.
Hi, this is Social Dissonance, also known as Shepard from YouTube.
Hi, this is Mr. Freak Show, YouTube Let's Player and Monster Hunter enthusiast.
We are three Monster Hunter enthusiasts who decided to come together on a weekly basis to discuss strategies and share an experience. Mr. Freak Show is today jumping in for Nick because Nick couldn't be with us today. So far, we did our podcast very methodical. First, we did weapons, then we did armor. We thought it was time to mix it up a little bit and do a little bit of an oddball topic. And we are already off to a good start with being too late this week. Sorry about that. So we have received this email from one of our listeners, Michael, and he sent us a message on Tumblr. Hey guys, loving the podcast, especially the bit where you mentioned about where you need 10 skill points for the skill to work. I was getting really annoyed with my thunder resistance having no effect against the Legiacrus. I'm currently gathering materials for my full Baroth armor and the lens to hopefully help against the Legiacrus. Any other tips? Michael from the land far away, also known as Erland. So we thought it was actually a good idea, a good start to actually talk about the monsters who you need to defeat when you do the urgent quests online or the urgent quests offline. The urgent quests, if you remind you very quickly, are the quests you need to do in order to get more high rank quests. And actually, offline online is actually quite important because when you get an urgent quest, you stop collecting new experience points. Am I right?
Yeah, you will get stuck at one point to go to the next level once you've kind of reached the HR absolutely before your urgent up. There's still a little bit of leeway, but before you, after you're eligible, but before you've completed your urgent quest. But if you stay there for too long, you're just going to be, not really wasting time. You should still be enjoying yourself, but you're not going to be getting any HR points.
Yeah. So if you have an urgent quest, then it's a very good idea to try to get it out of the way as quickly as possible. So you don't waste any Monster Hunter rank points. So there is a list of, I think, five different urgent quests, and I guess we could just go through one monster after another and give you some broad tips and ideas on how to deal with those monsters. And the first one, fair enough, is the Baroth.
The Baroth is hailed all over the web as the biggest roadblock for every new beginner because it's several times faster than Kurupeku, Great Jaggi, Royal Udroth, and every other monster. When you're suddenly faced with a charging bulldozer,
he'll
tear down the whole area before he can get to you.
Yeah, I know.
Kind of scared players and make him do mistakes. And he's so much faster, hits harder, and got different kind of a tactic compared to everything else. But since I'm mostly a sword and shield and a hammer user, I tear my eyes out farming Royal Udroth materials until I can get the highest available water hammer and just tire him out. You should never fight Baroth while he's enraged with a hammer, because you cannot reach him unless you do some level 1 charge attacks straight for his legs and start smacking him. But also one thing to note while fighting Baroth is you should never use a water weapon on a non-armored body part, because that will lower your water damage extremely much.
I heard about it. So first of all, he's covered with mud, and the parts that are covered with mud, they are... they can be damaged with water damage, but as soon as the mud comes off, then the water doesn't do any damage on them, right?
Yes, it turns to fire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really the most interesting aspect of really any monster in Monster Hunter Tri, is you have this monster that changes elemental weakness as the fight goes on.
I think the Agnactor is similar that way.
No, he just gets more armor.
Yeah.
I can bring him up here in front of my screen real quickly.
No, but Christian, you're right, actually. Elatreon, depending if he's on the ground or in the air, his weaknesses will change as well.
Ah, okay. I think I looked it up once. I think with Agnactor, it was once it was water and the other way was ice. So it was very close.
Possible.
Yes. That is true, actually. The damage for water is the same when it's armored and when his armor is molten. The ice is also the same. The only thing that changes slightly is the head elemental damage for thunder.
Oh, wow.
Doubles.
So really? It doubles in armor mode?
It lowers in armor mode. So if you're using a thunder weapon, which you shouldn't on him.
Yeah, why would you?
You'll do less damage on his head than the rest of his body.
All right, but that was just a tangent. Back to Baroth.
Yes, back to Baroth. When you're using the hammer, never engage him directly while he's enraged. Try to either leave the area, come back, or make him dig, or just run around until he tires, which it usually takes about 2 to 3 minutes. Then you should have a charge ready. Just wait on the side of a wall, and just run back and forth until he charges you. And then as soon as he's done, you should never be on his left side. Because, or is it the right side? Because of his tail.
I think he spins counterclockwise. So, whatever that is. I don't think he ever spins.
When he charged and he stopped charging, his tail is going to swing around and smack you in the face.
Yeah, it swings right and then left.
Yeah,
to the right. You should always be on his left side, your right side. And you should be able to get a quick super pound straight on his leg, and you should be able to break his armor and make him trip pretty damn fast. Always try to have the green sharpness up. You should never try to fight him with a regular sharpness weapon. And yeah, avoid damage, tire him out, charge in, get quick hits, run out, never stand still while fighting him. But if you're doing it online, always try to be as near as him as possible, because if you're running around all over the area, your team members will not be able to do anything against him. So as soon as you stop running and start engaging him a little more than online, you will handle him without problem. And also flash balls on him, flash bombs, is kind of cheating. So
it's not.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. It sounds like you have a very cautious style of play with the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
What I find is that if everybody's together, or even if you're online, I think this is interesting. If you have just something to speak in terms of the elemental distribution, is it might be worthwhile to bring one or even two people with fire weapons. Because as the match goes on, if he ever leaves the mud area, he won't have the opportunity to replenish his mud. And if that's the case, then you might actually start running out of spots to hit him with water weapons. And at least one fire weapon will be good in order to continue to be hitting those exposed areas.
That is very true. But sadly, I'm not the best player. And most players on low rank aren't very that. Very good. Well,
that's a very good point.
In general terms, about weapons and armor that you'd want to bring, my two suggestions are Kuropeko armor, depending on how good you are at dodging, or especially if you're no good at dodging, it'll increase your life by extending the use of your recovery items.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't want to use Kuropeko armor, you can forge, I believe it's called alloy armor, which gives you sharpening speed increase, which I think for most new players, they don't really know the timing on how to sharpen their weapon or when to sharpen their weapon. And so rather than it taking 1, 2, 3, 4 swipes of the whetstone to sharpen a weapon, it only takes one. And so it's going to give you a lot more opportunities to keep your weapon at the green sharpness so you're not bouncing as often.
Also, what we mentioned on the last podcast, you can also use the Rhinoplos armor.
Rhinoplos, right. Oh, Rhinoplos, right. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, because that one makes you immune against the mud attack.
A good strategy, though, I think I have a video demonstrating this, is if you stay like directly underneath him. Or depending on how much mud you've broken, because I think that how much mud he has on his body determines how much mud he shakes off. Don't anyone quote me on that, but I guess I am saying I think it has some correlation there. If you can just poke him at the very end of his tail, usually there's no mud that goes back there either.
No, it's something that you can pull off if you really, you know, fought him a couple of times. But when you're new to him and you fought him just a couple of times, then it really pays off to not having to worry about this attack.
This is true. Okay, fair enough.
I use a different armor than the Kurupeko. I actually use the Great Yagi armor.
That does increase your stun resistance, right? Do you know how stun works, Mr. Freakshow?
Indeed, I do.
I don't. Please explain.
Similar to the way you KO a monster. As you hit them in the head, you build up a certain KO meter, and after it reaches a certain level, they'll be knocked out. Like, that status will be inflicted, and they'll be knocked out for like 5 or 10 seconds or whatever it is for them. It's the same way for players, except it's a bit more general, in that every attack a monster has to you, as far as I know, has a specific KO amount. And the more you're hit in a period of time, the higher that goes up. And if that hits a certain amount, you will be KO'd as well. So long, even if you're being hit occasionally throughout a match, as long as there's enough time between the times you're being hit, you will not be knocked out.
Well, it's basically like in a fighting game, for example, like in Street Fighter. When you get hit a couple of times in succession, then you get knocked out. But if you're able to recover in between, then you're fine.
Exactly. And of course, the people that made Capcom or made Monster Hunter's Capcom, maybe it's almost a very similar mechanic.
Yes, and of course it decreases over time.
Right.
Onwards, back to my armor choice. Sure. It's quite easily gammed up to attack up medium. For my kind of tactic, the hit and run tactic, it'll make my hits slightly more deadly.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you're too cautious like me, and the fight goes on way too long, the Gourmand armor skill will also make your rations last much, much longer.
Right. I think it's one ration counts as two, essentially.
Yep.
Oh, I never even considered that, but that would be good if your matches are going to go on for longer than like 20, 25 minutes.
Exactly. And that coupled with what's it called?
Ludroth Hammer? Yep.
So the Baroth is, you know, the first one where you really have to, make up a strategy, when you have to pay attention to the different attacks, where you have to repeat the fight over and over again to learn the monster and anticipate what he's going to do next. The next monster is the Lagiacrus.
Oh, God.
Which is actually a monster Michael mentioned he's having troubles with. And his solution was to get the Baroth while armor. So fight the previous monster a couple of times to get an armor and the lance of it. So he gets, thunder resistance. Shepard, do you think that's a good idea?
Well, certainly. I mean, just going off of our previous conversation, there may be differences in fighting a monster for the first time than fighting a monster regularly, in that I was just considering bringing in Raytheon armor, possibly, or Great Baggy armor. Raytheon for the earplugs, or Great Baggy for the increased focus time. But if you're a new player and you just constantly are getting hit by attacks and you don't know how to get out of it, bringing an armor set that is purely defensive, just so you learn how to fight the monster, is not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also what I mentioned. But after time when the monsters get very difficult, then you always need at least one fight to observe the monster, to learn his attacks and stuff like that. And it really pays off to have an armor that that makes you last longer.
Yeah, considering you're fighting online for the first time, like this is your urgent and you're playing with a bunch of other players that have experience.
Mm.
Baroth armor, actually, just considering this fight alone, you have adrenaline +1. So when you're close to death, if you accidentally get it hit while you're drinking your potion, which is, I'm sure, happens all the time to new players, you're going to have that extra armor and that thunder resistance.
Especially with Legiacross, because he's one of the monsters. He can be, you know, on the opposite side of the level, and he can just get into you so quickly. You sometimes get very surprised on how agile this monster can be.
I'll let you guys do your take on the strategy, and I'll kind of do my more advanced take on what you should come in with.
Well, I can mention very quickly. I fought this monster predominantly offline. And offline, I thought he was a very challenging fight, but actually quite enjoyable. He's a very long fight, so you have to prepare, you know, for the long term. So I used a lot of rations and stuff like that. But I actually did it at my second try, and I was doing it solo. And of course, when I fought him online, then I was already quite experienced, and I had already quite the gear. Having the Baroth armor for low rank equipment, the Baroth lance as an equipment is actually something I did as well. And this is how I think I defeated him on single player, and I also think that using the lance as the weapon is also actually quite a good choice, especially for him, because you can block a lot of his attacks, and it's a very strong weapon that works pretty well against him. So I really had a great time using the lance. So how about you, Mr. Freak Show?
Hammer user against Legiacross. So it's kind of hard.
Yeah, because you have to dodge a lot of times, right?
Dodge a lot of times, so you can almost never get in a good... unless you're really, really being cautious, you can almost never get in a good super pound. But I usually only go with the Pekko Flint, or is it the... suck at those names.
The first Kuropeko Hammer is the Pekko Flint, I think. We mentioned this on a previous podcast.
I usually just go with that, and as well, this time with the Jaggy armor. That's because I'm lazy. but it actually works really well, since I'm a cautious fighter and my hit and run attacks get more powerful, and sometimes he can stun you with his charging and his tail swiping and his biting. So you can get out of that quicker, and also a long fight ration doubled, hooray. But for the Baroth armor that Michael asked about, I wouldn't really suggest the getting Baroth armor, because even on low rank and high rank, it's critical eye low, one down. And unless you can counteract that with some kind of expert armor skill or decorations, using that as well as a Baroth weapon will really kill your affinity, and it will reduce your overall damage, which will make the fight longer. For the sword and shield, you should always never have your sword and shield out when you're not attacking him. And you should swim around him, wait for him to charge, and just do the moving charge attack straight in on him and get quick hits, dodge out, and keep going. And use the first fire sword and shield on him. That's probably the only thing I could really add on the Legiacross.
Definitely. And I just realized the advantage of the lance against the weapons you mentioned is that you rarely get hit by any lightning attacks. So basically you can only do two or three lightning attacks, and one of them, thunder attacks, I mean. One of them is just when he spits a ball of lightning, but you can easily block this with any kind of lance. Then the other ones is when the shard on his back starts, sparking, just throwing off sparks. That's a tell that he's going to do some kind of attack where everything around him gets hit by lightning. And at this point, when you're using the lance, you just start mashing the dodge button. And what it does, it is your character is going to start to reverse, and then you're quickly out of the danger. So using lance has a certain advantage there.
Yes, the lance is probably the best weapon to use against the Legiacross, especially with guard one up. To add on his lightning ball shooting abilities, he can actually chain two lightning balls in rapid succession.
Hmm. Yeah, when he's in rage mode, he'll do that.
Yes, so you should really be careful and not go out to guard mode too early, because he'll really mess you up then.
Yeah, definitely. So Shepard, what's your strategy on Legiacrus?
Well, when I farmed him offline, I used a combination of the Great Baggy Armor for focus, and I used the upgraded Kuropeko Hammer. And then I think eventually when I was really farming him, I upgraded it to the Red Bludgeon with Rathalos parts. And that advantage is because one of the toughest things to get off of Legiacrus, and I'll talk about it in this regard in terms of farming him, is getting his horns. I never really had a problem getting his plates, because you'll get those generally through rewards and whatnot. But if you don't break the head, I don't think there's any other way to get the horns.
Yeah, definitely.
And so your strategy is going to be like, how am I going to break this head most efficiently? And when you're fighting underwater, gauging distances can be a little difficult. So even if you're a little off hammer super pound, if you're using the Great Baggy Armor, it's going to double the amount of time. It's going to half the amount of time it is for you to charge up to a super pound. And essentially what I do is I just, wait for him to do an attack, miss with it, charge up my super pound, hit him in the head, and rinse and repeat until the head is broken. And usually you'll get off at least one or two KOs. And when that happens, actually, if you're using the fire elemental hammer, that's the one instance where it may be worth it to charge up for the spinning attack, the level three spin attack, because it hits I think six or seven times. That's a very quick attack to get off a ton of elemental damage.
Not in the golf swing as well.
Right. And then the golf swing at the end, that does a ton of damage as well. So you're not necessarily losing out on damage. I mean, you're still doing a ton of damage, of raw damage at the very end. Now, that's for the hammer. I would use Great Baggy Armor. Otherwise, I'm trying to think, if you want to use the lance, I think a good combination would be the Great Baggy Lance, Benabra Armor, and the Blast Piercing, or the Blast Earrings. And essentially, that's going to give you a relatively high raw-powered lance, because at that point in the game, you don't have access to a fire elemental lance. You have to wait until you can beat Legiacrus and get to Ignactor, or maybe you might have access to the event online. But in general, you're not going to have the correct element. So if that's the case, use a status that he's fairly weak to. He's pretty resistant to paralysis. I'm not sure about poison, but he's fairly weak to sleep. So if you can sleep him at least one or two times and get off like two or even four large barrel bombs on his head, it's going to do a ton of damage, and it's definitely going to break those horns of his. And if you already break the horns, great. Work on blowing up his back or his chest to get extra rewards for there as well. We can say if you're bringing in a lance, you're bringing in a hammer, or you're bringing in a bowgun you wouldn't want to bring subshot online, but if you can bring in a bowgun with fire shots, that would be fine. All those would be fine sets.
But against Legiacrus, I would never advertise for using the greatsword, because you can never get in a charge on water. You can get in charge on land.
That's not necessarily true. If you have Great Baggy Armor, you'd be able to get off a level 3 charge pretty much anywhere.
That is true, actually. I never thought about Great Baggy.
Even without it, so long as you time it well. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, this is my firm belief is that the Great Sword is maybe the most difficult weapon in the game to use. So it's certainly not something someone unfamiliar with the game should bring. But in general, it's not that the Greatsword can't ever be used. You just have to be extremely familiar with the timings on how long it takes to land the level 3 charge.
That is so true. But still, beginner, Greatsword, Legiacrus doesn't really add up that perfectly well.
I mean, there's a special advantage with it in that, worst case scenario, you still do have the ability to block. And so any weapon that has the ability to block is good against Legiacrus. One, because he screams fairly often. And two, almost all of his attacks are charges. And so if you know you can't get out of the way, at least block so you don't hopefully die immediately.
Yes. The most used weapon, I guess, Legiacrus would be hammer or lance. Right. Well, that's the only thing I have to say about that.
All right. Then moving on, the next monster would be Jen, which I must admit I haven't fought yet, because I fought only the monsters, most of the monsters offline. And then I'm just fighting my way through online mode.
Most of the times I'm on cannon or turret duty. But when I fight on the second part of him with a hammer, it is pretty easy to stay at a range, get a charge up, run in, super pound run out of range, so you're never in range of his side swipes or his flick attacks with his hands. But if you're only on turret or cannon duty, lance or a sword and shield is probably favorable because of his rocks he keeps throwing at you. If you see him throwing, you should go into shield mode and weather it out. And other than that, you should, probably if you can spare the defense, you should. So most of the times, try to get bombardier or speed gathering, because when you need to pick up spear gun weapon ammunition fast, speed gathering is so much worth it. Other than that, I'm usually just on cannon duty. I never run around on his back.
Shepard, I think you did a very, very comprehensive tutorial, explaining all the details on how to fight against Jen. Do you have any general advices you can mention very quickly on this one?
Well, here's the basic idea when you're going up against Jen. It's what you bring there doesn't really matter. In fact, the most useful skill you could probably have for half of the fight is speed gathering.
Yeah.
Your goal the entire fight should be finding ways to stop him from attacking you. And you pretty much have two renewable resources on the boat that you want to be using every time he has started to attack you. One is the Ballista Binder. You only get one of them. It's in the chest when you first start off. You can shoot it at him whenever he's attacking, and not only will it stop his attack, but it'll hold him in place for a little while. So if he's close enough to be hit on the boat, hopefully he'll be close enough to continue attacking that. You'll be able to continue attacking him, or if there are people on his back, they'll be able to continue attacking his back. The second is the gong.
Mm-hmm.
And the gong functions very similar to the binder. I've heard a couple of things saying that it's exactly the same. I was under the impression that it's slightly different than the binder, in that there are some attacks that Jen will do where he's doing like a huge body slam or a huge charge towards the boat. And I was under the impression that the gong is the only thing that can stop those attacks.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it functions the same. Your results may vary. And then the third is the Dragonator on the front of the boat. Only use that about 10 to 12 minutes in when he's rushing at the boat headlong.
Mm-hmm.
You want to hit it. You want to hit it a lot earlier than you think you need to hit it, because there's a bit of delay. But basically, the strategy for Jen: learn the timings on the weapons so you can use them efficiently to stop him from attacking you, so the rest of your team can go about shooting him with either cannons, ballista shots, or hit them normally with their weapons if they have good enough weapons to do damage. Jen's one of those monsters, even if you're running at him naked, like no weapon, terrible weapon, terrible armor, you can still probably beat him only by using the items on the boat, if you're using them correctly.
So it's in Jen, it's not very much about your equipment and your weapon you have equipped and stuff like that, but very much about how well you know the monster and how well the entire team knows what to do and every phase.
Exactly. I mean, for low rank, for high rank, things change a little bit. He has a lot more life, and so you need to be doing a lot of damage with your weapons. But for low rank, going into him for the first time, as long as you are familiar with the way the fight goes and you can aim a ballista shot at him, you're going to be in great shape.
Okay, so we are about finished with Jen. So we're going to make a cut here and do it a two-part episode. And in the next episode, we're going to discuss the Double Trouble quest and Devil Joe, which I guess especially Devil Joe is one of those monsters which we can spend a lot of time discussing. So, but for now, I suggest we move on to all the feedback we received from our listeners, and we have received a ton of feedback from our listeners. Thanks to everybody who sent stuff in. We appreciate your comments and questions a lot, and we will do our best to address them all at some one point or another. And one of the things I would like to start off with is an anonymous message we were sent in on Tumblr. And it reads a little bit like this. Hey, could you guys explain the real difference between raw damage and elemental damage? I mean, I know that certain monsters are weak to certain elements, but how does elemental power compare to raw power? As in, how much raw damage would I need on my element-less weapon to match one with elemental damage?
Should I get into this one?
Yeah, Shepard, you know the math. You can crunch down numbers. So I was also wondering this as well. I mean, do I just add the number on top of damage, or I guess it's a little bit complicated, right?
Well, here's the way elemental damage work: is you have an elemental number on your weapon, right? Let's imagine it's a sword and shield, and it says 250 fire damage, right? Mm-hmm. What elemental damage does is that for every attack you do with your weapon, you're essentially doing a second attack at the same time with the element as well at 10% of the power of the element, right? So your base fire damage from that so-called sword and shield would be 25 fire damage you're hitting the monster with. So depending on the monster's elemental weakness in that area, and generally, even the weakest monsters, it's going to be between 20 and 30%.
Mm-hmm.
So what's 30% of 25? That's like about eight or nine.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing about 8 or 9 damage per attack with that specific element. Now, the main question that this person has, should I use element on my weapon or not? Well, certainly for Unite, the weapons that did a ton of raw damage, it was always more worth it to get more raw damage because the way the damage formula works out, you know, the saying was basically raw is the best element because everything is weak to raw and not so many things are weak to element. The strategy I take is if I'm going to be hitting with this weapon a lot, like it's a sword and shield, it's a lance, it's a longsword, or it's a bowgun, you're going to want to be using elemental damage because that's like a lot of attacks that's going to be adding up an awful lot. If you're using a hammer, although a hammer is a little bit different because you can do the spinning attack, that and the hammer also usually has a really large elemental damage on it to scale a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The hammer is kind of like an in-between. Switch axes, of course, have some sort of built-in element in all of them anyways. And greatswords are pretty much the only one I would say definitely don't worry about getting an element on there. Now, that's not to say you couldn't do it, because certainly there's some really cool-looking greatswords that are elemental that you might want to use just because they look good. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, Monster Hunter should be fun to you, and if you have this really amazing-looking weapon, like, I think the Warren Monument or the Ancient Monument greatsword, like, it's not the greatest greatsword in the game, but it looks freaking amazing. Like, you know, so don't use it. You know, don't not use it because it's not going to be an ideal damage. But if you're going for numbers alone, like you're going to speed run a monster or something like that, or you feel you need every advantage you need, you know, sword and shield, lance, longsword, and bowgun are all ones you want to do. The way sharpness works with element, it will add sharpness too, is the higher levels in sharpness you go, the more raw damage becomes more important and elemental damage becomes a little bit less. And I'll just say, because the way the multiplier works is raw damage goes all the way up to 1.5 times for purple sharpness. Elemental damage gets a boost from sharpness as well. But even at purple, I believe it only goes up to 1.2.
Mm-hmm.
So if that makes any sense, you're getting more bang for your buck with white or purple sharpness and to a small extent blue sharpness as well. At green sharpness, they're about equal. Raw is 1.05. Elemental is 1.0. Blue is 1.2 for raw, 1.0625 for elemental. For white, at white sharpness, it really starts to make the jump. So unless you have a Latreon or Devil Joe weapons or sharpness plus one, elemental is fine to use. But once you get there, here's where the jump goes. 1.32 for raw damage, 1.125 for elemental, and purple 1.5 and 1.2.
So if I understand it correctly, having better sharpness increases your raw damage more than it increases elemental damage.
Right. At higher levels of sharpness, the benefit you get from damage becomes more and more apparent with raw damage than it does elemental damage.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's not to say if you have sword and shield, I mean, these weapons that attack extremely quickly, you know, you're going to be doing a ton of raw damage anyways, so you may as well add on. I mean, the only issue is like for the sword and shield and elemental damage, I recently did a Diablos tutorial that actually I finished a lot faster than I thought I would. But the problem with Diablos and like sword and shield, for example, is you can't really hit him where he's most elementally weak. You know, generally for the sword and shield, you're going to be hitting in the legs or hopefully in the head if you're any good. But, you know, depending on the monster, you might be better off changing your weapon only because elemental isn't going to be able to, the elemental weapon you would want to use wouldn't be able to hit him in the correct area anyways.
Hmm. Well, I guess if you want to, and want you know, going back to the original email, if you have trouble to crunch all the numbers, because it's very complicated stuff.
It is.
And if you have like two weapons and have to decide between the two weapons, then I guess the easiest way to do is just to try the two weapons out and see what works better with you.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, the way elemental works is unless you're using the elemental that monster is most weak to or has a substantial weakness to, you're almost always better off just using a higher raw damage weapon, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. So you always have to do research and check out what weaknesses the monsters have.
Right. If you're not familiar at all with the weaknesses the monster has, just create, you know, either the Baroth chain or possibly the Barioth chain or the Diablos chain of weapons in order to create a high raw damage weapon and do that. Like, I finished the offline game using the Baroth Lance. Like, I beat Sadius with that. I mean, I had no problem. You don't need to pair elementals. You just need raw damage.
It's an excellent lance. I use it as well.
I was just about to reassure about the sword and shield shines better if you couple the elemental with the weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Because the raw damage that a sword and shield does is doesn't really compare to the raw damage that a fully charged hammer or a fully charged greatsword does, but because of the extreme speed that fires its attacks at elementalist golden for the sword and shield.
Yeah. Freak Show, I might actually disagree slightly with you.
Uh-huh.
And I will say, because I was posed this question in my most recent tutorial and I did the math on it. And here's the thing with a sword and shield, which might make it a fairly good weapon for beginners, so long as they can still get the correct element. And the sword and shield is essentially, it's a very forgiving weapon for the hammer or for the great sword, to a slight extent, the switch axe, not really for the lance, not really for the long sword. If you're interrupted mid combo, that's okay. You know, you can just keep getting off, like, you know, the 1-2 hit and the side slash, and you're going to be doing okay damage. And the reason for that is all the weapons have in their formula a different divider for the total amount of damage they do. That's why when you see a lot of people playing online, if they're very new and they're not at all familiar with the way the game works, they're all using switch axes because they have the highest number on them. They're like, wow, big numbers, I love big numbers. But, you know, a switch axe, you have to take the damage it does. You have to divide the switch axe's total damage by 5.4. So if you're doing, you know, it says 800 damage times 30% for a normal slash, that's about 300 divided by 5. You know, carry the 1, divide the 2. Maybe you're doing about 30 damage. For the sword and shield, you're only dividing by 1.4. And not only that, but for the sword part of the sword and shield, you actually add an additional multiplier on. In a way, whenever you're attacking with the sword of the sword and shield, you're kind of doing a mini critical with it. And I know that's going to sound very bizarre.
It does. I think you completely lost me by now.
Okay. Well, for the people that are still listening, don't look at the numbers. You know, as long as you're using the weapon the way it's supposed to be used, you'll be doing about the same amount of damage with all of the weapons.
Hmm.
Just use the one that you feel most comfortable with or you enjoy using the most. Don't worry about going into a battle like, oh, this weapon's not good here, this one's not good there. Certainly for some monsters, the Geocrest, you know, you're fighting them for the first time, bring a shield so you can learn them, but never don't bring a weapon because people are saying that weapon sucks, don't use it. Unless it's the switch axe, which that sucks. But any other weapon, feel free to bring it in because it's awesome.
Well, I mean, that's a very good advice. I mean, people are sometimes overcomplicate the matter a little bit, you know? Like they try to do a lot of math into it and try to calculate their odds. And in the end, you know, the equipment doesn't affect the outcome of the battle as much as simply your skill and, you know, your familiarity with a certain weapon. So
I mean, I'm guilty of it, Christian. I am. Well, I mean, I know all these numbers, but I know in the end it's a difference of 15 to 20% at most.
Yeah, and in the end, you know, for you, for people who are very, very, you know, deep into the game and basically have the technique is perfected and then they don't get hit so often anymore. You know, for them, it's very important to know to what weapon gives you an advantage. But if you are, like a low level monster hunter, then, having one weapon against the other doesn't make that much difference as, just improving your technique does. So, always don't worry so much about the numbers and just use the weapon that feels good.
Yeah, coming prepared for the fight is always more prepared, like in terms of the items you bring, than necessarily than the weapon you bring.
All right, we have a different message. It's from Tyler, and he sent us an email. And it's a little bit long email, but it's an important one. Hey, I'm a big fan of Shepard and your podcast, but I want to make a correction about last week's episode. Shepard mentioned needing purple sharpness for hammers to cut through Uragan's head. But you actually need only white sharpness. Also, I wanted to ask where he heard about the 75% deflection penalty. Because I've heard that, but I've also heard that it does the full elemental damage and other theories such as it only affects sharpness below green. And then some people say that deflection doesn't affect damage at all. This is interesting to me because I was thinking about building up a database and making a very specific damage calculator better than the one out there. Although if what he said was true, then here is some important information that I have personally gathered regarding deflection and hit zone multipliers. These are the hit zone multipliers followed by the minimum sharpness required to cut through.
Well, essentially, he's calculated based on the amount of raw damage the monster takes in that specific part.
Exactly.
How much sharpness you need to cut through it without bouncing.
Exactly. So, and then he said, happy hunting. So this is actually pretty cool data. First of all, let's get back to the stuff he mentioned that we said wrong in the last episode.
Oh, well, first, I have to thank him for listening. I mean, clearly,
certainly.
He is very dedicated, and also he's one of those good people out there that is continuing to find out exactly how the game functions. I mean, I think at some point we're going to stop seeing monsters and we're going to see like ideas.
We're going to do the fighting only in spreadsheets.
Yes, I believe so, and I will be there with him. And if I did say purple, I guess I was wrong. He is correct. I believe it is white. And thank you for that correction. I wouldn't want people ruthlessly grinding out sharpness plus one gear and a Latchiron gear just to try and cut through his chin. As for the deflection penalty, I actually did check the GameFAQs damage formula. Now, the damage formula that's up there for Try, it's great. And it has a couple things in there that are new from Unite. And just something about it, though, and the bowgun damage formula is that they're continually updating those formulas. And so it may be that he has neglected to mention the deflection penalty, or it may be that it doesn't exist. I don't know if it's changed for Try or not. The way I understood it, and I think Florian knows, I think that's his name, but maybe it was Tyler. Maybe it's both. As I understand it, raw damage, when it's deflected, is reduced to 75%. However, I believe it continues to do the full elemental damage. And the reason why this was important in Unite is there was a weapon called the Dual Swords, which allowed for a extremely fast combo, which people would use continually in a demonized mode because you would continue to do a ton of elemental damage despite bouncing. Like everyone knew if you're bouncing, you're doing less raw damage, but you're continuing to do a great amount of elemental damage. And actually, going back to a previous point, elemental damage isn't affected as much by sharpness. So it's okay if you're continually bouncing as long as being deflected but not bouncing, if you have ESP, that is. It's okay because you're continuing to do that elemental damage. It's not as big of a deal in Try, but certainly in Unite and when Monster Hunter Portable 3rd comes out, those will both be things to consider.
Mm-hmm.
beyond that, these numbers he's created, and I don't know if we can put them in show notes, Christian?
Definitely. I'm going to put them in show notes on our Tumblr blog.
Okay. What you did there is awesome. And actually, I have not seen that in a list like that. And I hadn't ever considered that that's exactly how it worked. But to discover that bouncing is determined by area weakness is a really cool find. And I hope that everyone associates with the it with you if you are in fact the one that discovered that, because that's really cool.
So well, we also have received some messages from fans of Switch Access. I think we might have exaggerated a little bit our nitpicks with this weapon.
No, if anything, I didn't exaggerate enough. No, I take that. I mean, Switch Access can be the best use of a Switch Axe I can imagine is if you're fighting a monster that's particularly susceptible to paralysis. Using the status burst with status attack up is a great way to get off a lot of paralysis off on a monster.
Well, there you go. You're just sabotaging my attempt to make it up with fans of Switch Axes.
No, but I mean, otherwise, no. I mean, they still... I mean, look, I made a concession earlier. Use whatever weapon you find is the most fun.
Exactly. And sometimes using a weapon that looks cool is also a very good reason to use a weapon.
That's true.
All right. So we're running a little bit late on this show, so I guess we're going to call it a night. And we're going to come back next episode with the remaining monsters, with the remaining urgent quests. If you want to get in touch with us, simply write us an email to monsterhuntercast@googlemail.com or comment on our blog at monsterhunterpodcast.tumblr.com. We are interested in your opinion and especially would like to ask you to send us suggestions for topics for our next episode. So if there's anything you want us to discuss, let us know and we will do our best to help you out. We will be back next Thursday, hopefully this time. Until then, we wish you a good hunt. And remember, don't worry about the big numbers. Use what feels right. All right.
For Switch Axes.